Genesis 38 on Through the Word. A chapter, well, a chapter that you almost want to skip. It's a sordid tale here in 38, and not one for the kids, I'm afraid. Kids, pause it now and ask your parents to check it out first. Parents, well, you'll see. Do you remember Judah, the brother who saved Joseph by selling him? 38 begins as Judah leaves home, moves out, and meets a Canaanite girl. He gets married and has three sons, Onan, not the barbarian, and Shelah, not an Australian girl. They're all boys. And time passes. Boys grow up, and in verse 6, Judah got a wife for his firstborn, and her name was Tamar. But Judah's firstborn, was wicked in the Lord's sight, so the Lord put him to death. Wow, that's a little shocking. We don't know what sort of wicked this was, but for all the things that God doesn't take a man out for, must have been some kind of bad. And watch what happens next. Verse 8. Then Judah said to Onan, "Sleep with your brother's wife and fulfill your duty." Say what? Sleep with who? A little explanation. There was a custom, later a rule in Deuteronomy, that if a man married, died without kids, the widow remarried his younger brother. Why? Two big reasons. One, provide for the widow. Very important to God. Two, provide a family heir accounted to the older brother. This particular bloodline is important. So, agree or not, that's the idea. Verse 9. But Onan knew that the child would not be his. So whenever he slept with his brother's wife, I don't want to read the rest of that sentence. I warned you. Suffice it to say, Onan had sex with her, but made sure they had no kids. Verse 10. What he did was wicked in the Lord's sight. So the Lord put him to death also. Wow. Now, historically, some teachers have used this story to say that God is against contraception. I don't see that. The issue here isn't so much contraception as it is deception, selfish lying. Onan stepped in, and instead of caring for the widow and raising a child, he used her for sex. Sure, I'll sleep with my brother's widow, but she doesn't get a child. No love, no sacrifice, no providing, just sex. You know, sex is a tricky subject, and the Bible has some strong warnings. But read carefully. In the Bible, sex is not bad, but it is dangerous. Sex is not dirty, it is holy. Holy means set apart, for a special place and special purpose. It's like a fire, great in the fireplace, deadly outside of it. So Judah has now lost two sons, both wicked, and he tells his daughter-in-law, Tamar, "Live as a widow in your father's household until my son Shelah grows up." But the truth is, Judah thinks Tamar is bad luck, so he gets rid of her. A long time passes, and Judah's wife dies. He grieves for a time, and then he heads out on a trip with his old friend Hira. That trip just so happens to take him through the town where Tamar lives once again. Tamar hears that he's coming, and also hears that son number 3 is all grown up and not marrying her. So Tamar hatches a plan. Verse 15. When Judah saw her, he thought she was a prostitute, for she had covered her face. Not realizing that she was his daughter-in-law, he went over to her by the roadside and said, "Come now, let me sleep with you." What? Now keep in mind, he doesn't know who she is. Her face is covered. Judah thinks she's any old prostitute. And hey, he's single now, a widower. He gets what he wants, she gets paid, nobody's hurt, right? Wrong. Stepping into the present, the reality of prostitution is serious. It is a huge industry built on human trafficking, kidnapping, forced drug addiction, and much worse. Pornography is no better. When you watch, you support it. With more dollars than the movie industry, it's horrific, and you can no longer claim ignorance. Jesus set prostitutes free, and his people do the same today. More thoughts on prostitution and porn on the B-side. But back in our story, Judah wants to hire a prostitute. He doesn't know it's Tamar, so Tamar asks what he'll pay. He offers a goat, only he doesn't have it with him. So she wants a pledge, a guarantee he'll send it. In verse 18, she takes his seal with a cord and his staff. The seal represented a man's identity. the staff, his authority. So he gave them to her and slept with her. And Judah moves on. Finish the trip, carry on. No harm done. Remember, ethical pragmatist. Reason it through. I didn't hurt anyone. He keeps his word, sends his friend to deliver the goat and pick up the pledge he gave her. But his friend can't find her. In verse 21, he asks around about the shrine prostitute, but they tell him there is no shrine prostitute there. So she can't be found. And Judah says, let her keep it. After all, I did send the goat. Practical as always. And that's it. Only that's not it. Sex doesn't work that way. There is no just move on. 3 months later, Judah gets news. Your daughter-in-law, Tamar, is guilty of prostitution, and as a result, she is now pregnant. And the plot sickens. Judah still doesn't get that Tamar was his prostitute, and he is indignant. Bring her out and have her burned to death. Wow, ain't no hater as hateful as a hypocrite. But Tamar's not done. She sends a message to Judah. I am pregnant by the man who owns these, she said. And she added, see if you recognize whose seal and cord and staff these are. Busted. And Judah knows it. She is more righteous than I. I want you to see something here. Judah treated sex as something to be paid for and walk away. That's worth a goat. But sex always costs you more than that. He lost his seal, his identity. Sex affects your soul, and casual sex will rob you of your identity. It takes a piece of you. You think you can just take it back, but it's gone. And Judah lost his staff, the emblem of his authority. Back in the present, how many men have destroyed their family, their reputation, lost respect, lost jobs, destroyed ministries, and lost all authority? Christian leaders, and all for sex. Fools, standing at the point of temptation, risking everything, lying to themselves, and imagining they can just send a goat and get it all back. I'm talking to you. Don't believe your own lies. It will not work. And there is a balance here. It's important that we don't get weird. Historically, the church has added all kinds of rules to sex that are not in the Bible, about contraception, about positions, and added a sense of guilt to sex that does not belong in marriage. God made sex good, and he made it for marriage. Sex is for procreation, it's for pleasure, and it's for unification. The two become one flesh. Hebrews says that marriage should be respected by all, and the marriage bed kept holy, set apart. What that means is sex is set apart for marriage. And within marriage, it's all good. There's no guilt. But outside of marriage, when the two aren't committed to stay one, sex destroys. And it's a sin. In a marriage, sex is like fire in the fireplace. Outside of marriage, it's like fire in the rafters, and it will destroy. But also remember that Jesus forgives sin, and he heals. He forgave the adulteress and set her free, and he takes the broken and makes them whole again. And our amazing God, in his amazing grace, will even use what is broken for good. Tamar gives birth to twins, Perez and Zerah, and you will find their names again, along with Judah and Tamar, in the book of Matthew, in the bloodline of Jesus the Messiah. Amazing. Jesus can redeem even a story as crazy as this one. They say that redemption is the scarlet thread that weaves through the whole Bible. And guess how chapter 38 ends? A little baby with a scarlet thread tied on his wrist, and his name means risen. Read chapter 38, and for more thoughts on the meaning behind the scarlet thread, and on contraception, prostitution, pornography, and other stuff I'd really rather not talk about, except that it's really important, check out the B-side.
Join us next time as we continue the journey, one chapter at a time. And remember, faith comes by hearing, and hearing through the Word.